In the world of education, there's been I'll call it a silent revolution that's been going on. It's not something huge or obvious that we hear about the Arab Spring or revolutions happening around the world, but it's been happening quietly over many, many years. And in a nutshell, I think it would be qualified as drawing out or bringing out the hidden potential in every person. I don't want to say necessarily every child, but every person. It's going from the secular world. There's a famous British educator named Sir Ken Robinson, and he speaks about the educational system for the last 100 years, which was like the Industrial Revolution, where you have a manufacturing plant, and products go in one end, it goes through a process, and it comes out a product on the other end. And he describes that as the educational system that we've had for the last 100 years. It's just children go in, you give them a lot of information, and they come out different. He says in the last dozen years or so, decade, that there's been a more organic type of process where it's not just information out, but it's enabling the individuals to develop and grow themselves. A lot closer to home, we have that now within the Strata Chinuch, taking an entire look at the entire Bagriot system and drastically changing it in the coming years, slashing it, getting it to the point where we're able to really build and develop the future of the nation and not just information in and information out. And perhaps closest to home, there was a recent lecture by Zacharia Wallerstein from Ornava at the Aguda Convention in New York, which understatement would be it made waves in the religious world. If you look it up, it's all over the Jewish press, not the Jewish press, but the Jewish press, that Rav Wallerstein basically was given the exact same complaint against the educational system, that on the one hand, we have tremendous Torah institutions, but on the other hand, we have a manufacturing plant where we're manufacturing Talmid Yechachamid. We're putting them in, teaching them Torah, and we're sending them out. And he gave a beautiful mashal, and he said that the battle between Yaakov and the Sar Shel Esav, the Torah uses the very strange lashon of Vayivak. He says, Vayivak is dust, what's that relevant to a battle of the forces of good and evil? So he says, Esav knew there was no way he would ever destroy Torah in the world. Torah was always going to continue. Baruch Hashem, we have incredible Torah institutions. But what does dust do? Dust dulls. Dust on gold, dust on silver. It gets dull, it gets dim, it gets dingy. So the beauty is gone. So Esav said, I'm not going to destroy Torah, I'm just going to dim it. I'm going to dull it. And Rav Wallerstein said, I'm not going to say that I said it, but Wallerstein said that that's what the Torah institutions have done now to Torah. We're just making it a subject, we're testing it, we're giving them a curriculum, and where's the sparkle, where's the shine, where's the geschmack, where's the excitement that we're able to draw out from what the Torah and what Yiddishkeit should really all be about? So even though it's a new revolution, perhaps, in education, there's been somebody who beat the curve by 14 years. And Rosette Freundlich opened the yeshiva in Muncie, New York 14 years ago called Shaarei Aravim. And taking all of these principles to his core, developed a school that's been incredibly successful. In fact, he's already opened up branches in Lakewood and Baltimore. And as I quote Rav Freundlich said, that Shaarei Aravim is not a school, but it's a concept. And I once heard an incredible quote. I want you to guess who said it. It says that everybody is a genius, but if you judge a fish by how well it climbs a tree, he'll grow up his whole life thinking he's an idiot. Who said that? Albert Einstein. So for the past 14 years, Rav Freundlich has taught fish how to swim and monkeys to climb trees, I don't know. But we're very honored to have Rav Freundlich here tonight, and he's graciously offered to take open questions and answers at the end, general questions of chinuch, and he's also made himself available if there's specific questions of chinuch as well, either tonight if it gets too late, then perhaps tomorrow we'll be staying in the Lafayette Center. So, Rav Freundlich. Thank you. Harry and Rosa are sitting at their traditional breakfast table, eating their traditional breakfast, and they notice that the new neighbors move in next door, a young couple. And Rosa remarks and says, wow, that young wife,
She doesn't know how to do the laundry. The clothing is really dirty. And the next day, Harry and Rosa sit down again for breakfast, and Rosa looks out the window again and says, I don't understand how they stay married. I mean, the clothing are filthy. And the next day again, Harry and Rosa have their traditional breakfast, and Rosa looks out the window again. She says, someone's got to teach her how to do the laundry. And this goes on for a couple of weeks. And then finally, one morning, Rosa looks out the window and says, finally, she got her act straight. She knows how to do laundry. I wonder what happened. And Harry says, I washed the window. When we talk about Chanoch Lenar al Pidarko, educate a child according to his way, a clouded lens distorts reality. And we must be brutally honest when we talk about Chanoch Lenar al Pidarko, that it shouldn't become Chanoch Lenar al Pidarki. And this is something that not easy, and it's certainly something that we all grapple with as parents, feeling what's best for our child through our lenses, even though our lenses may be a little bit cloudy. I'm going to quote something, because I would never dare say this myself, from Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch. This is something which was mind-boggling. Only Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch could say this, and we have to understand what he means, but Vayidu Hana'orim, Esav and Yaakov, were brought up. And Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch brings out the concept that they were brought up together. I quote Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch from his original German translated to English. As long as they, Yaakov and Esav, were little, no attention was paid to the slumbering differences in their natures. Both had exactly the same teaching and educational treatment. And the great law of education, Chanoch Lenar al Pi Darko, was forgotten. Whereas when Father Yaakov visualized the tribes of our nation in the sons standing around his deathbed, he saw not only future priests and teachers, he saw around in the tribe of Levites the tribes of royalty, of merchants, of farmers, of soldiers. Before his mental eye, he saw the nation in all its most manifold characteristics and diverse paths of life. And he blessed all of them, each according to his specialty, with in his different path in life, did he bless them. Had Isaac and Rebekah studied Esav's nature and character early enough, and asked themselves, how can even an Esav, how can all the strength and energy, agility and courage that lies slumbering in this child be won over to be used in the service of God, and the future Gibor be trained to become not a Gibor Tzayed, but in truth a Gibor Lefnei Hashem, then Yaakov and Esav, with their totally different natures, could still have remained twin brothers in spirit and life. Quite early in life, Esav's sword and Yaakov's spirit could have worked hand in hand. And who can say what a different aspect the whole history of the ages might have presented? This is a very, very heavy statement that we're not accustomed to. And of course, we have to understand Hayilah Ba'avos Yitzchak and Rivka, but certainly must open our eyes to think for a moment. If the Avos, Hunter Shamfield Hirsch, were not, at least on their level, of course, on the exact target of Esav, his nature, how much more so do we struggle with this in regards to our own children? And when we see our own children and we ask ourselves, where, how, what venue should we mechanach our children in? We have to stop and ask ourselves the question, are we doing Chanoch Lenar Pi Darko or Al Pi Darki, or maybe Al Derech of my neighbor, or my friend in shul, or popular culture in our communities? And it's incumbent upon all of us to ask ourselves the question, are we doing what's best for our child's personal growth? One of the things that my yeshiva Shari Razum has done and the other yeshivas that have followed in our educational derech, is work on something called multiple intelligence. Multiple intelligence was created by Howard Gardner about 40 years ago. And multiple intelligence says as follows, that every single human being has a specific learning language. And I call it language because this is the language that we communicate with ourselves and with others. For instance, just to make on a little light side here from Mr. Chantrapal Hirsch, all of you out there know how to remember a phone number, right? You have to remember a phone number. In this room, there will be at least 7 different ways to remember the phone number. Some of you will remember a phone number. Think to yourself, how do I remember a phone number? So you say, well, I just say the number over again, 547-3838. There are some people who say, no, I remember where it is on the dial pad, 547-3838 from the top 3. Some of you will make a mathematical calculation. You say, well, 547-3838. There are some people that I've asked, they said, oh, I remember the tone. The music tone, and this is the way, if you have a question amongst yourselves, this is the way you may show your differences. It's not for naught that some of you will remember it by saying it over and over again. Some of you remember a mathematical calculation, some of you remember where it is on the dial pad, some of you remember the music. That's saying that your learning language is something specific, different than someone else's. You know, we talk about languages, so I learned in Mexico many years ago, Mexico City, and it was always funny because I always thought I knew Spanish until I talked to the cleaning lady, and I went to Mexico, I realized that I didn't really know Spanish at all. And I'd ask someone, excuse me, sir, can you tell me, you know, I would say my English first to try maybe new English. Can you tell me to get to the bank? So it's a sorry, I don't speak Spanish. Pacara tu curo piquira para. Just because he said that language slower doesn't mean I understand the language. If you would have went pacara para, then what he's done is he's changed the language. And now all of a sudden, that slower language which did nothing for me, just changing the language all of a sudden makes me understand. I took this course in Tartessori years ago. They had a Howard Gardner, had one of his colleagues, and Tom Armstrong came down in Tartessori Convention and gave us this course for 2 days. And he asked us to please put on a piece of paper, get a piece of paper, it was in a box, and said, please put in this box how you would get from your directions from your home to your school. So everybody had about 3 minutes to put down directions how to get from the home to the school. So basically, in the room, there were about 75 Manalim there. Out of the 75 Manalim, about 25 Manalim actually wrote down, go to the corner, make a right, then make a left. And the other 50 made a map. And he said, this is not for naught. Your language of whether you write something down, which means you have some kind of linguistic language, that's the way you communicate with yourself and others. And for those who write down maps, we call that spatial. You may know it as audiovisual, but that's much more superficial than the details of, there's actually 7. There's linguistic, mathematical, logical. This is the way your phone numbers are taught. If you repeat it back, you have a linguistic type of language. If you're making calculations, you're mathematical, logical. If you're talking about pictures, that you're spatial. If you're talking hands-on, you're called kinesthetic. If you're talking about musical, well, that's called musical. And then there's 2 others, interpersonal and intrapersonal. But this is something which opened the eyes of me years ago when I understood that there are really differences in learning languages. And each one of these learning languages that we talk about is the key to identifying your child's alpidarko. Now, that doesn't mean that a Rebbe, you know, who says the Gemara, Zot the Gemara, and then your child says, Rebbe, I don't understand. Zot the Gemara. He still won't understand. When he uses the board, you've now added a new language, so he has linguistic plus, well, it's on the board, then that's called spatial. If he gets more complicated, between the Rebbe and my yeshiva are actually trained in all seven languages, and they'll start off with linguistics, Zot Gemara, and then the second language won't be Zot the Gemara, but it changes to Zot Gemara plus a board. Zot Gemara comes to the front of the desk and let me show you what it means. Ashtar Ksuva, the learning Ksuva. Let me show you about Metzi. Let's talk about buying and selling. Let's talk about finding a lost object, and that's called kinesthetic, a hands-on. Sometimes the Bacha doesn't get it, so the Rebbe does a beat and starts to whatever the Gemara is talking about and says, Eila Metzia Shalai. Eila Metzia Shalai. And some kind of beat. That's a musical. And all of a sudden, whatever language a child is needing for his own personal language, all of a sudden becomes real when he understands that the Rebbe is talking his language. Saying the language slower doesn't help you understand it better because it's not your language. And this is what happens when children will go to a yeshiva or anything, even communication with their own child at home. If you don't understand the child's language, they're not going to understand what you want from them. Again, it doesn't mean every time you tell the kid to clean your room, you put a song to it. Go clean your room now, otherwise you're not going to get supper. You don't have to do that, but there's a concept of understanding, my child thinks this way. Now, of course, there are variables, and no one's 100% something, and people sometimes are intermingling, you know, languages, and you're said this, and sometimes said this, but there are generalities that you'll know. I once had a plumber come to my house, a black fellow comes to the house, and he bring him downstairs to the basement where all the pipes are, and I say, I got a problem, and he's going, okay, I got the problem. He's a musical language learner. That means he understands things through music, and that's the way he views his parnasa. He's a plumber, but he's doing it through a language of music. And everything that you do in your life, you'll see, the way you communicate with people and yourself, comes out through these languages. This is the first way to identify the Alpidarko. And there, when we talk about this, you know, it's something that's new to us. It's difficult because when we have our own, I don't want to say agendas, but our own personalities, that sort of gets in the way of changing for our children. And that's the difficult part because we are specific learners, and my child has a different language, and I have a hard time relating to that. So I want to say on the flip side. I looked inside, I didn't see it, and I try to find it, maybe it's somewhere else. A different way of understanding Yitzhak Avinu, and just it really helps us at the same time. And this is sort of the next thing we're going to talk about is the Pasuk says that Yitzhak loved Esav Kitzayid Befiv. So Pasuk Shat Rashi, Kitzayid Befiv. Right? Because he tricked him. He asked him what kind of question. I think Meister from Shore, right? So he tricked him, Kitzai Befid. So the Ramban says, he says, Kitzai Befid. You know why Yitzhak loved? You know why Yitzhak loved Esav? Kitzai Befid, because Esav put Sayid in his mouth. He gave him a Geshmak steak. And he loved he loved the son, because he gave good shtick fleisch, a good piece of meat. You hear that? That's even worse than the first. What is that talking? What do you mean? Yitzhak Avinu Gevura, control, discipline. That was the way he brought it, manifest HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this world. That's what Chesed like his father, peace and love. It was Gevura, discipline. He should love a Geshmak HaHatov. Right? So the Mepharshim explained. He said because Yitzhak understood what his son's teva was, which is exactly opposite of Shachar Hirsch. He understood what his son's teva was, and understood that his kid was a hunter. And the way he would relate to his child, who's a hunter, is, could you bring me some delicious deer steak? Could you bring me like a schmack of steak? Yeah, the T-bone. Give me the T-bone. And Yitzhak understood his child, and then Rebbe he asked him things to do to bring them connecting together and to understand that they have that relationship. Exact opposite of Shavuot, according to Ramban. Both are true, and both are needed for both of our understanding of the mechanic, our child. You know, when we talk about having a connection with your child, there's nothing more that you don't want to do, and this has been by all machanchim, unless you're very special, is learn with your child. My Rosh Hashiva, Don and Garsher, from Beis Medrash Elyon, he told me, there are three things that I got to tell you that are the most important things in this world. Don Agarshi was the son of Reuven Grzowski, son of Baruch Ber, Shir Beis Menashayim, and he told me there are three things. I want to tell you, the first thing is Chazon. Chazara is the most important thing, and I know it's the most important thing because the Yetzirah never wants you to chazir. The second thing is Musar. Musar is the most important thing, and I never want to do it. And the third thing is learning with my son. It's the most important thing, and I never want to do it. So it's the most important thing, although you shouldn't do it unless it's very special. Learning with a child, unless it's a very special relationship, is very difficult. Very difficult, very stressful. Your son feels the stress, and feels it doesn't let you down. And therefore, learning with your son is not a great venue. What is a great venue, and we're going to talk about now, is spending time with the things that your son wants to do, his hobbies, his language. And if you identify the Chanukah Abidah, it's the same thing what his hobbies are. If he loves hiking, then go hiking with him. If he's a biking, then go biking with him. If he likes sports, then play sports with him. If he likes music, then let him sit down and show how to play some music. Whatever he has a specific niche for, and what he appreciates, that's where you need to spend time with your son. That's Kisayid Gefiv, as the Ramban says. Make sure your connection with your child is something that he's good at. Learning necessarily doesn't come easy. I guess unless it's that special relationship, learning with your son doesn't necessarily make the relationship stronger. It sometimes does the opposite. In the yeshiva, in order to understand a person's uniqueness and appreciation of a person's uniqueness, which is really the key, you know, when Rabbi Milinowitz and some of the other chachamim here, we asked me to come and speak, so they made this very nice brochure. And I was very happy because they told me what I should be speaking about: motivation, self-esteem, confidence, creativity, desire to grow. Number one is identifying Chanuch Lenar Akidar. Understanding his way. Not that key, not my way, but his way. Understanding to his learning style, whatever yeshiva goes to. Again, it may not be easy because the yeshiva may not have the same appreciation as you have for your son's way, but it's crucial. If you see from Sham Shafal Hirsch, it's not pashut. If you decide to put your son in the yeshiva that he doesn't belong in because it seems to be either convenient or what else am I going to do, you have to make adjustments because the repercussions could be very serious, as Hashan Shavar told us. And therefore, the first crucial step of all these things is understanding his uniqueness that Hakadosh Baruch Hu made him and gave him the specialty that no one else in the history of mankind could ever have, like your son has or your daughter has. And therefore, number one is to recognize his uniqueness. This uniqueness should come out not just in the classroom, but should come out in the things that he appreciates doing. In our yeshiva, we have an elective program. Elective program means that after night seder at 8:30 at night, and then Sunday afternoons instead of English that we have in America, so we have an elective program. Elective program means there's about 30 different electives. That means we have a musical elective, a choice of 8 different instruments: trumpet, trombone, saxophone, violin, drums, keyboard, guitar. Okay? That's just our music. Now, it's just not enough to give a music elective. You have to make it feel good about it. Just play music. So we have the only, I guess, firm marching band in the world. It's a 30-piece marching band. We go to chasnas, parades, spatial wave. And we're known worldwide for our marching band. Those from America, I've heard about it, I've seen the chasanas, a few of my alumni are here, I've all been in the marching band to some extent, but those are the ones who appreciate music. I have other electives. We have car mechanics, with a few of them who built a car, a 1965 Mustang, okay, 1965 Mustang from scratch. Right now I have a boat elective, they're building, almost kids can start going, I heard they do crazy things. I got a great idea, why don't you build a boat? So they show me online, they can build a canoe, a kayak. I said, that's not a boat, let's get a real boat. So a 15-foot schooner with sleeps two, an ocean-going vessel. It takes 600 hours. It took my four Buffum, who were good at their hands, but they weren't in any of the other electives. I made them in charge. 600 hours. They already finished the hull of the boat. And Bez Hashem, I made him voyages and be from Muncie down the Hudson River to Williamsburg, pick a piece of pizza, and come back. That's a maiden voyage. I just told him, make sure you wear life jackets. Anyway, but an outboard motor back. But, right, so it's Chanuch Lebedecha, those are good. Now, everything in our yeshiva, every single thing that could be built by the Bachram are built. They're Kodesh, gorgeous, the beam of Sram Shon, everything is built by the Bachram. When you come to yeshiva the first day, you don't have any desk to sit at. You sit at a long table. All the Bachram 9th grade sit at a long table, they got no desks. Every Sunday, for the next 3 Sundays, which is in Elzman, they spend 3 to 5 hours building their desks from scratch. I give them the wood, tools, you know. It can't be any drill. It has to be blood and guts, blisters on the hand, and all my alumni here are smiling. They remember, blood and guts. You have to turn the screwdriver. It's pre-drilled, but so they can't really mess up. And older Bachim will come and help them build their desks. The first concept in Shirazim is, you can do anything I approve it to, over and over and over again. So when you spend time with your child, you got to find his darkai. You got to understand what his hobby is, what his nature is, what his language is, whether it's in learning or in spending time, and find what he's good at and make him very good at that. And there's many other electives we have. We also have professional Chinese acrobats. So you're smart. Chinese acrobats, yeah, the flips and Chinese acrobats and somersaults and three stories and pyramids. And we go to Chassanism, and actually a year and a half ago, those maybe living by Vegan would know, a Yid calls me up and asks me, Shabbat Park. He says, I saw in Moses Nayis that you do shows, and you go, you do shows, you're a Chassanist, how much for a Chassanist? I said, well, in Muncie we charge $400, in Lakewood it's $1,500, in Brooklyn it's $2,000, where's your Chassanist? It's in my Vegan. I said, we'll do it for free. I just need 10 round trip tickets and a hotel stay. No problem, call my bookkeeper. Last July 4th, we was all in to Eretz Yisrael. We went all over Eretz Yisrael. Mama just gave it off myself by a little shite. We also made it to the chassid, by the way, at the end. And, so, Baruch Hashem, it's chanech l'naf yidach, I'll find what he's good at. And there are many other electives that we have at the yeshiva to bring us talent. And that is a parent. Your sons or daughters' shoes may not do that, but find what he's good at, spend time with him, build on him, show him that that thing that he's good at is really what he will be good at. And it's not just what he's going to be good at in yeshiva, but his life. And I don't mean just profession, which it also may be. I don't think any of our Bachim are going to become professional musicians. Right? That's not the goal here. But to develop his darkness is only going to make him to a developed human being. And that's the goal of what we do in yeshiva, and that's really the next step. So when we talk about understanding someone's darkoi and appreciation of his uniqueness, this is something that is number one. Number two, this is what we do in yeshiva, is we talk very much about understanding students and their life skills and where they come from, where they're going. I just thought of my father was a school teacher in Washington Irving High School. It was in Manhattan. It's like this. My father's name is already completely black. It was a pretty scary school to work to. He was a teacher, and he was a 10th grade history teacher, public school. And the principal said, "Mr. Freundlich, listen, Leroy's been in your class already for 8 years. He's already 25. You've got to pass him." I said, "What am I to do? He doesn't know the work." "Look, you got to pass him. I'm the principal. I'm going to ask him one question in history. If he knows it, he passes. Is that okay, Mr. Freundlich?" I said, "Okay, it's okay, true story." So the principal said, "Leroy, if you go into the New York side of the Holland Tunnel, where do you end up?" "Holland!" "You passed!" That was it, and he graduated to 11th grade. So, you know, you have to understand where your students are. You have to know where children are, so where they're coming, where they're going, and not necessarily the things that you understand as Pashit. Your child will understand this partially. That's really coming from a different aspect of understanding your children. Well, you know, let's bring back to Harry and Rosa. Harry and Rosa, you know, getting on in age now after looking out the window all those days. And finally, Harry says, "I think my wife has a little bit of hearing loss. And I've got to test her out." So he goes 10 feet behind Rosa and says, "Rosa!" No answer. Uh-oh. 5 feet behind Rosa. "Rosa!" No answer. He says, my worst fears are coming true. He goes right behind Rosa and whispers, "Rosa, yes, for the third time." So not understanding the problem is also a big issue. And this is what we're going to discuss next. And this is called the life skills is something that is very, very important. And unfortunately, many of our yeshivas and our own homes don't give life skills these days. You know, Rav Shlomo Volpe in his Sefer Chinuch talks about a concept of bringing Mashiach. Hashem has the master plan of bringing Mashiach, and it's done in two ways. There's Boinei Yushalayim, building Yushalayim, and there's Matzmiach Keren Yeshua. To bring the fruition of Mashiach needs a Boinei Yushalayim, building Yerushalayim and matzniach keren Yeshua, allowing growth of your salvation to sprout. And he says that that's the analogy of chinuch or anything in this world. There's a boina, there's building. It's building blocks means you have a bachar, you have a child that comes to yeshiva or to school, and you have to give this, you know, learning gemara, another blot, another blot, another blot, another blot, and that's the building. And then you have matzniach, the growing, the organic growth, an atmosphere of growth. That means planting a seed and step back. Of course, you've got to get sunlight and water. You have to create an atmosphere that, where the seed can grow, but step back and wait. Your job is creating an atmosphere. You know, when I was in Muncie, another yeshiva that I've taken on in Mahalchim Chinuch is a Satmar yeshiva in Muncie. And the roof of the Satmar yeshiva, a real, you know, with the cat glad, the real flying saucer, back glasses, a real soccer. He told me, Rabbi Freundlich, when you go to Eretz Yisrael, you have to visit a yeshiva that's just like Shara Ruzim. Out of yeshivas. He has a yeshiva, a yeshiva just like Shara Ruzim. Yeah, I've got to go. What's the yeshiva? Paduel. Anybody heard of Paduel? Okay, so I get off the airport, I get off the plane, I got to go to Paduel. He asked the taxi driver, take me to Paduel. Never heard of Paduel. No, tell me, hey, I'm from Paduel. Fine, one guy says, Paduel, that's in Shtachim. You gotta go. So it cost me $140 cash to take me to Paduel. This better be worth it. So I go windy roads. The taxi driver says, I don't have a gun. What am I gonna do? I said, look, I'm paying $140. Get me there. So, and we pass the checkpoints and we go to the Shtachim and we go around and he shows you, here's where three people were killed and here's where eight people were killed. And we finally get to Paduel. And it's this little community on the top of a mountain. And we say, Efo Yeshiva Shabadua. I have no what I'm looking for. I'm looking for Sharas and Star Yeshiva. And I get there, and I start this broken down building, and I walk into the kitchen. So I walk right in, and I see Mizrahi Bachrim cleaning, and they're cooking, and they're cleaning, and the entire yeshiva is run by the Bachrim. They're cleaning, and everything is done by the Bachrim. So I understand why things like Sharazim, because Sharazim, we have tremendous responsibilities, which we'll talk about soon. But there's something more has to be here. So I go to one bacher, he's wearing shorts, and a big kippah sugah, and I say, what are you doing here? He's talking to us a little bit. Why are you here? Why would you be in yeshiva where they make you work? He said, what do you mean? This builds an Eved Hashem. I was just taken aback. No, come on. What are you doing here? Did he give you good stuff, get good food? No, he's horrible. I love HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I told you each one, Hashem. I jumped up to the United States, and you know, that's not the way you talk. And I'm going to each bachar. Come on, let me ask you something. Why are you in yeshiva? Why did you choose this mechina, the hezder? Why do you choose this yeshiva? And he's going, because we want to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And I'm like, I cannot believe my ears. And there's signs all over the place. Yoser, Shimush Shalpar, Yoser Milin Muda, Vatrecha Kamoicha. It's incredible. I've never heard of a person talk this way. So I said, okay, let's go to the base measure. Here's what's going on. And you go upstairs, the ponytail, okay, you have the breast lufus, the payas with the knitted yarmulke, you have ponytails, yarmulke on, yarmulke off. It's I've never seen anything like this. Shorts, first yeshivas, eight buttons open, fighting about how the internet's destroying your life and Facebook is destructive and the whole atmosphere, the Bachar are just listening to the Rosh Hashiva and they're drinking in the word, they're learning Ashlag, which is a parish of the Sulam on the Zoyar. They're learning the Nachman, Satvarov, Slas Emes, and I have this Kaiser schedule. They like it's like Chassidus is the first part. Then Halacha, Chassidus, Musar, Hashkafa. And they're learning like deep Shemesh Shemeshmuel and Normally Melech. The whole thing is so, it threw me off my equilibrium. Just like, what? And then I sat down with the Manal of Yeshiva. I said, what is going on here? And I noticed there were mattresses in the basement. The bacha comes late to davening, gets to see the Beis Medrash. Don't get up on time to davening. you know, and everyone's a chroy here, and they build yeshiva, and everything's done, the maintenance and the thing, care, it's all about them, and they build human beings and make it into human beings, and Erlich, and that is sort of why this Sakhar Rav over there in Munsk told me to go to yeshiva, because that's what we believe in. And I walked out of there, I was obviously mixed emotions. So I came back in to speak to the Maligans. I got to talk to him. I'll tell you my thoughts first. And I went back to Rishon LeVolvi's Vart. He says as follows. If you just have a Boina Yerushalayim, you're just building, Torah, more blah, and you have no matzmiach, no atmosphere of growth, you've created a robot. In New York, we have some robots. They're just doing the right thing. They look good. There's no matzmiach, no opportunity to build atmosphere of growth. And they get blah after blah. They're boing short. And then you have just a robot. And in the future, at any point, there's no matzmiach, there's no organic growth. Robots can't organically grow. That's it. After you keep building, it stops. Robot's dead. Robot's over. On the other hand, Shlomo Volbe says, if you just have matzmiach kerishua, grow with no bone, you know, we have a tomato garden, right? So you put the tomato in, and you let it grow. Let's say you don't have any Home Depot, those metal trestles that let the tomato vines go on. You just have matzmiach. Tomatoes growing wild, all over the place. Just tomatoes, you step on them, there's what you need. Just raw matzmiach with no bona means wild growth. And I walked out of the door, I said, this is amazing, the matzmiach. And then I went back in, I said, first Shiva, to them now, so, are they finishing the sefers? Because it's such an atmosphere, they have real, and it's real Avos Hashem, and I they weren't kidding, I was asking nothing, but they really have Avos Hashem, and it was real, and I felt it, and I was very awe-inspired. I said, so, such an atmosphere, they should be finishing the sefers out of the love Hashem. Well, you know, some do, some don't, and that sort of hit me. Ah, it's Avos Hashem. Avos Hashem has to be tempered with Yiras Hashem. Matzmiach, Karen Yeshua by itself, just wild growth. You need boina. You need to have the boina and the sort together. One without the other, missing. And this is something that I worked out. That was the message I got out of. You need to create yeshiva with Avos Hashem and Matzmiach, Karen Yeshua, tempered with boina, or you know, something that comes together. And then it hit me, the name of Shai Russell, which I never thought about. There are many yeshivas in Muncie, Shara Toira, Oyo Toira, Beish Raga. These are all boy yeshivas. Shara Toira, Oyo Toira, Oyo Toira, Beish Raga. Shara Arozen. Ah, you have boyna together with Matzmiach, an atmosphere of growth. So how do we have atmosphere of growth? And this is something that I do as parents, and I say parents and educators, because you're the best educator of the children. You have to create a home which is matzniach, carry Yeshua. Boina ya panya, go clean your room. Do what I say. Go to sleep, that's the boina. Do your homework. Finish the blot. That's your boina. Your houses and your homes have to become matzniach, carry Yeshua together. The way we do yeshiva is we have a life skill curriculum which basically gives every bachur an opportunity to shine. The shining comes through activities that he may do, lectures that he may hear, just so you this that he'll have to act upon.
A second. This is called our life skill curriculum.
Life skill curriculum, the bottom don't see it. This is for everybody in Manali. It talks about the life skills, working together as a team, problem solving, confidence, communication, presentation, perseverance, responsibility, organization, goal setting, prioritizing, leadership. That's the first part of our life skills of being a human being. The second part of being a husband and a loving father. And the third part is being a person in society. And basically, each one, problem solving, the yeshiva is known, the bachurim,
This is not a problem-solving issue. It's a goal-oriented issue. Problems create people that become great people. It's an understanding. And this is not about the yeshiva. When we talk about confidence, you come to yeshiva, you know, if you walk into yeshiva, you think it's Kiddush Levana. Shalom Lechem. And they understand that the reason Shalom Lechem is because you have to understand another Yid, they appreciate another Yid, they can feel he's worth something. And the reason you don't say Shalom Lechem, no other reason, it's because you don't have self-confidence. And I give the marshal, the Bach and Morgan, a laugh here when I say, you walk into a building, right, or someone walks into your building, to your yeshiva building or somewhere, and you look at them, and out the Yid, nice Elch Yid, right, he walks into the building, and another Yid walks into the building, thick black glasses, leather jacket, tough-looking guy, who did you say Shalom Lechem to first? He always picked out the Yid. Why? He said Shalom to both of them. He's less intimidating. What do you mean? The Bachim understand, they're trained to understand, is that the reason you don't say Shalom Lechem is because you're afraid. Maybe you have to respond, maybe you think I'm weird. We build confidence. Every Bachim Yeshiva has to down for the other, which is normal. Every Bachim has to lane for the other. Every Bachim elbow blows shofar. Every Bachim does everything. Builds confidence. Understand that you can achieve, you can become great. You have an ability to be something even though it's difficult for you. Responsibility. Every single Bachim Yeshiva has responsibility. Every Bachim has responsibility. That means the three Bachim have to crack the eggs. Two Bachim have to cook the eggs. That means it's a responsibility that something's missing, that means yeshiva's lacking. It's not like a responsibility that no one notices. Every bacher has something yeshiva has to be done. Trains responsibility, achrayus for life, organization, goal setting. We have goal setting sheets, long-term goals, short-term goals. And bacher have to work on this with the banal. This is something you can do in your own homes, and you need to do, because these are the life skills that they can make them into human beings. And then we talk about being a father, a loving father, a caring husband. That if you don't do this now, if you don't show this to your children now, they're not going to pick it up in yeshivas. And unfortunately today, we see so many people, they get married, they don't have the skills. Just because you're of age doesn't mean you have the skills to be married, to raise a family. And then we have a whole curriculum on what it means to be a yid in society, and how it means to be our lagoyim. And this is the second thing that we have in yeshiva that creates this atmosphere of growth, is that the bachurim feel that they're of able to achieve greatness and to do things that never thought possible. There's respect and understanding and confidence building and responsibility that only I can do something that another bachur doesn't have that responsibility. I have responsibility, and when it happens, because I did it, and if I don't do it, there's repercussions. She doesn't have X, Y, and Z. Reb Shlomo Freifeld, one of my mentors, although I never learned this from Freifeld, I'm too young to be a Talmud of his, but I spent many years understanding his Mahalach. He says you can't make someone grow, but you can create an atmosphere that is conducive for growth. And that, as parents, your obligation as Mahalach, as educators, of your children, you have to create your homes an atmosphere where they have opportunity to grow. And the biggest thing about growing is if you plant the seed and then you want to see whether it grew and you dig down, did it grow yet? Kill the plant. You have to make sure you step back, create all the environment, let the organic growth grow. Because if you have a boina to go and see a Yeshua, you have a human being that will continue many, many years later. Even when you have stepped away and the child has moved on, you have a continuous growth that you as parents have given him the opportunity to absorb. You know, in Lakewood, after Hurricane Sandy, there was a story, I don't know if you heard it, a story going around. There was a human mind in Lakewood, a Lamden, who was walking by a row of townhouses in Lakewood, the new townhouses. And he was right after Hurricane Sandy, there were about 10 trees in front of townhouses. And he noticed that every other tree fell down. Exact same way. Bam. One tree up, one tree down. One tree up. And so most of us walk by. So that's interesting. He said, no, there's a scar here. That's the lumpus. So he came closer and noticed that around the trees, there was a sprinkler system that the constructor, whatever the builder put in for the trees. Wherever the sprinkler system was around the tree completely, that tree fell down. And the one that was about 5 feet away from the sprinkler system, that stood up. Okay, so didn't answer the question. So there must be a smart. he understood that a tree that had a sprinkler right there had no reason to dig his roots into the ground. He got water right there. The ones that were far from the sprinkler system had to dig their roots all the way down into the ground. And when the winds blew, they were able to withstand all the hurricane forces. Your children come from tremendous homes. They come from your homes with roots that are dug deep into the ground. The truth is they should be able to withstand all the winds that happened in their lifetime. In Kenainar today, the winds are this small and smaller. And those winds can blow for many hours in your child's mind and heart. And Baruch Hashem, you have created wonderful roots in your children that they have what withstand the wind. But they're not trees. Although Shai Rosen is a tree, they're not trees. We look at them like teeth. There's adult teeth and there's baby teeth. The baby teeth are well rooted inside your child's mouth. Perfect. They look perfect. And you dental floss them and you brush them. Now, I'm not going to ask the question because I know what the answer is going to be. When the dentist told you when your adult teeth came in, you have to brush 3 times a day, dental floss 8 times a day. You have to have a special floss with a little bit of a pick. And we know what the answer is, how many you actually listen to when you were kids. When your adult teeth come in, you have a very small window of opportunity to make sure they gain roots. It's not a tree. Your children come from your homes. Your roots are strong, but they're not trees. They're baby teeth that have moved on to adult teeth. When the teeth come in, they need to make sure, you need to make sure, that they develop strong roots. And whatever maintenance needs to be done to correct that or fix that at the beginning is, I don't want to say your only chance, but the real chance you have for them to survive long term. If you neglect them right away with a small, or I don't know what it is, 6 months or a year, when they're developing those roots, the adult teeth, if you neglect them there, you're going to have to suffer for the rest of your life with your teeth. This is chinuch. Your children are wonderful children. When they're moving on to adulthood, adolescence, and adolescence is the most difficult time of a child's life because they want to be treated like an adult, but they don't want the responsibilities of an adult. They want not to be treated like a child, but they want to act like a child. So it's very confusing. That adolescent point is your key right before, when he's 12, even 11, 12, 13, 14, those are the years that you have to create strong roots for them to be able to hold that for the future. Number one is recognizing your child's uniqueness, what makes him special, because motivation, self-esteem, confidence, creativity, starts to grow is based on number one, the uniqueness. Number two is creating a shalom always. Create a home of warmth and environment of growth. Give him responsibility, show him he can become great, build his confidence, build his ability to communicate. Make sure he gets up again. It's difficult, but at a young age, ask them to get up and speak at the table to build their confidence. I know it's not easy, but try to encourage them. Do whatever tricks you need to give them the life skills that they need desperately to become healthy fathers and husbands and healthy. The dream we all have is our children should be healthy, even and happy fathers and husbands and people that are really to Hashem. There's one more thing that I'd like to discuss about, which is the key of bringing these most important leaders to your children. You know, many of you are thinking to yourself, this is an amazing yeshiva. And the Baruch Shai Rosen is amazing. We have three other yeshivas in the United States, other communities that have adopted our mahalla. Baruch Hashem, we're now moving on to a capital campaign, the Yeshiva House. 300-400 Bachar. Through them become a force in Klal Yisrael altogether, the Klal, to change the face of Klal Yisrael, to give a different opportunity for hundreds of thousands of Bachar who are Yishmak Yehudim, who understand that their uniqueness is giving them the life skills and the opportunity to grow beyond the Bani Yerushalayim is something they need for life. This is going to change, Baruch Hashem, the face of Chinuch in America. I was brought here by Askanim Rabbanim Ramat Beit Shemesh, Rabbi Shemesh Shmuley will be opening up a yeshiva this coming Elzman called Arzei Levana, which is after Shari Razim, Arzei Levana, which will be a yeshiva. I mean, our yeshiva is the incubator for the past 14 years of success of Bachrav living on. I have many of my alumni here learning in the Gris, in Mir, Shalom Shechter, Tzvi Kaplan, Kalyin Galait, and I have Baruch Hashem many Balabatim who moved on with families after 14 years, Erlich Eden, and we have an array of Talmidim. And the Askanim have brought me here to Ramat Beit Shemesh to entice you that there is a new yeshiva that will be opening up in Shemel Elzman. I'm very involved with yeshiva, following the Derech of Shari Razim and understanding specific needs of Ramat Beit Shemesh community. Of course, every community. Lakewood is a little bit different because Lakewood community is different than Muncie. And the Baltimore yeshiva is a little different. And the Chassidish yeshiva is very different. The same educational philosophy. And the Ramat Beit Shemesh community, of course, has their own specific needs. I was going to help you, help the community develop such a yeshiva. For those Bachrim who are looking for a yeshiva that could help them become great and understand that their abilities of greatness are really ain't safe. There's no limit to what they can become. But I really want to end off with the third aspect of chinuch of our children, which is so fundamental. Number one, the uniqueness of the two of developing an atmosphere of growth. And it's interesting because I had this past Shabbos a reunion of my alumni. About 15, 20 of my alumni were learning in the Eretz Yisrael Yeshiva and Kosher Yeshiva at Yisrael. So from Kalyin Galait, they came together Thursday night. We had a Hanukkah party by one of my alumni and his dear in Yerushalayim. And I told them that I'm going to be speaking, and I said, no, well, tell me a highlight of Shari Razim that I should speak about. And they said, Reb, are you going to tell them the Glenn story? I actually didn't think about it. I said, no, I'll tell them the Glenn story. I said, well, no. There was a little boy, Glenn, a 7-year-old boy. Him and his brother were unfortunately actresses in 1910, were actually burned in a terrible fire by pouring gasoline into the stove fire instead of kerosene. He and his brother were burned 50% of their body, and they basically were sent to the hospital with basically no hope to survive. Over the next 3 months, Glenn's 3-year-old brother died. Glenn was so badly injured that doctors wanted to amputate his legs. His parents pleaded for more time. And as he heard the conversation between the doctors, Glenn's parents, your child will never walk again. Glenn in his bed are unable to speak, says to himself, I'm going to walk. I'm going to run one day. And they didn't amputate, they waited. After a few months of living one day at a time, the doctors removed the bandages, only to find his left leg was 2.5 inches shorter than his right leg, and his right foot was missing most of its toes. Glenn was sent home with no hope to ever walk again. Then we sent him in a wheelchair, and he used to take his wheelchair to the porch and roll down to the porch. And there's a white picket fence around his front yard, and Glenn would come down to the bottom of the porch every morning. He'd throw himself out of the wheelchair and hold on to the white picket fence and drag himself across the fence and drag himself until he'd feel some movement in his feet. He would drag himself so much that after 2 weeks, there was a path guard and he pulled himself around. And he did this day after day until about 2 months later he found that he had movement in his legs. Now unfortunately, being a cripple, he kept saying, I'm not going to walk one day. I'm going to run one day. He was then put on crutches, and of course going to school was very difficult for him because every time that he would try to get anywhere, it was impossible to get with crutches because schools were not handicapped equipment. He would throw his crutches down on the floor and he would walk step by step, excruciating pain. I'm not going to walk, I'm going to run. And Glenn continued this for the next few years. At one point, he found himself being able to walk with some kind of momentum. He went to the horse in his backyard, held onto his tail, whipped the horse, and the horse started running. And Glenn was riding with it. Glenn continued this for a number of years. And he says, I have a lot to make up for my loss, but I'm going to run one day. The young boy who was burned in a fire, who would never walk again, had a name. His name was Glenn. Glenn Cunningham. The same Glenn Cunningham in 1934, Glenn Cunningham was the first human being to run the mile in under 4 minutes. Glenn Cunningham in 1936 earned a silver medal at the Berlin Olympics. He was awarded title Athlete of the Century in Madison Square Garden in 1938. Now hearing this story is a very powerful and emotional story. I heard this story from a person that has a yeshiva for learning disabled children. Chesner, very wonderful person. And he gave, I was with Manalim, and he gave us the Manalim workshop, and he gave us the story. And at the end of the story, he said, I told this over to my yeshiva, my learned disabled boys. And they looked with anger at me. And Dr. Chesner said, he was taking a nap. And the boy said, do you think we're like Glenn? You mean, are you comparing us to Glenn? No. I was just trying to inspire. Glenn had it much easier than we do. When Glenn threw his wheelchair down and pulled himself across the yard, his family was cheering him on. Go, Glenn, you can do it. When he threw his crutches down in school, his friends were saying, you can do it, Glenn. They were cheering him on. When he went behind the horse, they were saying, Glenn, you can do it. No one sees our struggles, these students says. No one sees our pain, what we struggle with. No one sees how when we are trying to learn in class and we're distracted, no one cheers us on. Glenn has it much easier than we do. There's a fan club. There are people that root him on. They give him the chizik. We get no chizik. And when I heard the story, and I told the story to me, the Baruch Hashem, our Bachim coming from strong backgrounds and learning. But just this concept, you know, I was driving the Bell Parkway once, and I saw a big billboard. It says 27% of kids drop out of school. 100% of kids need a boost. And that was the concept. I don't care who you are. I don't care any of us. All of us, if we would have had someone rooting us on, cheering us on, giving us tremendous chizik, you can do it, your struggles, and every single girl and boy who goes through any system needs a chizik, needs a boost, needs a cheerleader, needs someone to give support. And without it, you'll be a boy in a wheelchair. And with it, you'll be the fastest man alive. And the third thing, when we talk about motivation, self-esteem, confidence, creativity, desire to grow. Number one is the uniqueness, understanding the chanoch and arpidarko. Number two, it's the life skills. It's understanding the opportunity for growth, creating a home of growth, giving him life skills for life and her that they can go on to be healthy human beings, fathers, husbands, wives, mothers. And the third thing is they need a lot of chizik, a lot of support. And you are the only ones who, unfortunately, the yeshiva system does not give the support that a parent can give. And understanding these three yesodis is something that's going to give your child the opportunity to grow and to become a human being, a healthy human being, a parent and a spouse. And as Hashem, understanding these yesodis is something that all of us need to let absorb, inculcate, and to be able to bring this back to our children in a way that's real, palatable, and something that children can really feel. Bez Hashem, with that, will all raise tremendous Oyed Hashem and Yerush Shemayim. Thank you.
My question, I think, one that a number of people had is that how do you integrate what's in the more general Israeli society with the spiritual body of how do you integrate or not integrate that reality into this system?
People in the United States always ask me, are you pro-college or are you against college? They say, we're pro-Avodas Hashem. And every person understands that answer is our job is to give a person life skills. Life skills means if you need to go to the risk, you have the life skill you need to go to the risk. if you need to go to the workplace, you have a life skill to learn. I cannot answer your question because I'm not involved in the day-to-day versus English, obviously, American is everyone. But the concept is that I don't care what the answer is. But in order to follow this understanding of given the life skills of life, it has to include something that whatever his life skill is going to be, he is prepared. Sending a child to the world ill-prepared is the biggest barrier that you can do. So I'm not answering specifically because I don't know the answer to your question. But the assignment, and I tell parents, I have offered them in the great institutions in Exeter, Charlotte, in America, and I brought them from law school, and I brought them from medical school, obviously after years of yeshiva, brought them from working, and each one gained the life skill, the confidence to be able to do what they need to do now in the sifta, or Shittown in your case, that they can achieve greatness in life, whatever they do. So I avoid the question very easily with a parent who says you go to college, you get college, because it's irrelevant. I'm making a human being, creating a caveman to be able to conquer. What they do that with the parents and the mahanhala and yeshiva, I have many different drugs. So I'm going to also avoid your question. Again, I really don't have an answer. I don't even know what the hadhala, I guess, the rabbanim and the sfarim will give you more details. I think there's an open house in two weeks of an open house about this yeshiva, and there you can ask that question to the point. Yes? Bullying, that's a very difficult, and that's a big topic in the Schlock magazine and the Jewish Observer in the United States. Bullying is really coming from low self-esteem. The bully feels inadequate, and the only way, you can ask my boyfriend from here, I have about 10 alumni here. When I go like this, right, they all laugh. There are two ways to reach greatness, right? You can work hard. Your friend's up here, and you're down here. You want to reach greatness? You want to reach your friend? There's two ways. You can work hard and get up to him, or you can knock it down. And now you're the same. We talk about this all the time. The concept of bullying comes from low self-esteem. And I call spade a spade. We don't talk, I don't mince words. It's very strange. If you're picking on someone, if you're showing that you are more cautious, it's because you have a low self-esteem issue. And part of the yeshiva is to build confidence and build self-esteem through all of our programs, yeshiva. So mamela, the need is less. Does it not exist? I would be foolish to say it doesn't exist, but it's much less. You know, by our retreats, the Bachram know, we have two retreats a year. The retreats are very powerful, thematic retreats. They are workshops, and the Bachram's in the, whatever the theme is very powerful. And they understand that the study is to build human being. We have a kumz, it's Friday night, we'll sit around and sing. Come on, every Bachram Shita has to get up and sing solo. Get up and sing solo! Schultz, don't be afraid. Don't look at someone else, sing solo. It's an atmosphere of security. Bachram, not afraid. You know, I once had a Bachram Bachram for the army, a ninth grader. Now, the men here know what happens to a freshie. If he makes him wait an extra 10 minutes, he missed the bracha, and all happened, then the minchah was just over again. We know we were done with the freshie, he does that. Right? The bracha, after he finished 10 minutes again, the whole she waited, he told me, Rebbe, not a single bracha said a word to me. It's an atmosphere of security. So we know what this retreat is, and then we get to sing. We know the bachurim. Bachurim with the hearing aid got up. You know what were the hearing aid sings? I mean, it's one less secure environment. We don't have. And this is 80 bachurim, 400 bachurim, I guess. So, of course, there is bullying. There's always bullying, because until the person fixes his self-esteem, he's going to bully. It's much less.
Yes. So what is the protocol we use to handle?
And when you come to yeshiva, you're already bombarded with these concepts of understanding yourself, understanding why you do something, insecurities. We talk very open about that. The Rebbeim are obviously following up in the shiurim, but when every morning after Shacharis, I give about a 20 to 20 minutes, I have a pep talk every single day about all life skills, all concepts, or whatever it is, topics of the of the week. You know, all the different midos we talk about this, and we're very straightforward about what it means to understand yourself and why you do things, why you put people down. So the protocol is just really bombarding him with concepts over and over again. You mean to say what's the disciplinary action?
Right, not necessarily, what's the theme of action, not necessarily discipline, but
I mean, what's the theme of
how, action? How do you teach the children to handle?
Oh, the children itself.
Right.
Okay, well, this, every Rebbe will talk about the specific circumstances with the Talmud. It depends what it is. If the child is being made fun of because he, you know, is not good at sports, there's one way to handle it. And there's a shtalts that the Bachim learn to have, that understanding how valuable they are. When another doctor says X, Y, and Z, not to let it affect you is something that the ready work of the child.
And another quick question is, prior that your Rebbeim have degrees,
all of our
masters of education,
our English teachers have, most of our teachers are master of education. The Kurdish Rebbeim do not. I personally, I've been giving them basically once a month. They get the, and of course, our regard you know, different types of intelligence, multiple intelligence courses, and different courses that I would give them, but they're not.
Should I have
a mentor?
Yes. Is there any hedge book as far as you're putting in time and effort onto life skills, etc., as far as Hester, as far as the particularly and sort of a connected for that child? Some children, they'll grow much more in their learning by having the other aspects. But if you have a child who's really built for a lot of hespec and a lot of learning, and sort of,
I'll be honest with you. I have two children, and it was Muncie. I send my children to one to Beis Shraga and one to Beis Medrash Elyon. These are high level yeshivas. As they were getting up in age, I was begging to get them a class in Shari Razin, but they're so advanced, I couldn't find a class for them. But I sent the yeshivas, and I told the yeshivas on condition that Tuesday night he comes to marching practice, and Wednesday night he has to come to acrobats. So my sons are actually in my elective program as well, and they get that from me. If the yeshiva here, or any yeshiva, so my goal is when I have, Bez Hashem, when I have my capital came in, I have yeshiva, 300 bachurim, I will have an opportunity for them to have very intense learning, at the same time life skills, i.e. an opportunity, an atmosphere of growth. Like my, you know, the shadows are extreme. You're going to finish in a Zekin cold, cover to cover, by the time you graduate from Sifta in high school. So if your child is someone who is a very motivated child, he still needs life skills. We know many very bright children in the New York area who have super duper sharp minds, but they're not balanced when it comes to understanding other human beings' feelings, and empathy, and these things. So just because you're a solid learner, if you don't have the understanding and awareness of another person's needs and being grown in an organic growth opportunity place, you're going to be lacking. So although you need to develop a shiur which is matzim for him, you know, I once asked your matzim son Solomon, I said, you know, which bacher doesn't need our elective program? He says everyone needs a program. How much? That's the difference. But everybody needs to have a healthy outlet. Right? So is it an hour a day? Is it half an hour a day? Is it once a week? Everybody needs a healthy outlet. So, yes?
Question. You said that you shouldn't learn with your son. Exactly do you mean?
No, I just cautioned you that it's not, there's a tremendous tension when a father learns with his son. There are parents who should, fathers who should not be learning with their son. I didn't say it across the board. And everyone has to understand there. If you feel the tension, stay away. That's really what you're doing. Yes. And on the side?
Yeah. It seems like a lot of girls' schools are already implementing
yes.
these types of things
yes.
without this more room for boys. But how can girls' schools improve more? How can they take more of these concepts and apply to them?
You know, it's funny because I'm not sure exactly what the Beis Yaakov movement exactly was for. But it seems like, when I had a parent come to me, we have a few Hasidic Shabbatim, you know, with the curly pays, they came to, you know, to take for Harris and Hashiva. And I said, like, I don't understand. Like, you know, your son is not like a super duper masmid, but isn't that what Hasidus is all about? He said, no, the Hasidim have become the flax. If you don't have the bottom line block, you don't finish your sephis, you don't have a klar, you throw an Hashiva. He said, yeah, and I was screaming at the banal. What do you mean? That's how Hasidus started. What have we become? Litvax. Unfortunately, the girls' schools have become Litvish yeshivas. Bottom line curriculum, But of course they have the concert and they have drama, but at the same time, I get out of the girls' schools. Many of the schools are very curriculum focused, and I guess it depends what their student population is. That's something they have to revisit to find if the girls are moving out with life skills that they need to be mothers and wives. So I don't have an answer to, but it's interesting that everyone's become sort of to this. You know, it is that we were living in a Wall Street Journal bottom line. How much money do we have? Bottom line, to make it, to make it. How much you care, how much you want to be Erlich, we sort of, because we're affected by the dying moves. There's a bottom line. Do you make the Forbes magazine or not? How much you tried? Who cares? But it's Hashem. It's the antithesis. It's about the way this Hashem is working. It's not about how many dollars you have. Yes?
Two questions. One very simple. How old did the buffer go
in Yeshiva? In Yeshiva, it was from 14 to 17. It was high school, ninth grade.
There's no comparable thing for Beis Medrash?
We've been thinking about that. We're looking to make a new research, but not at this point. No, not for us. I mean, there are both midrashim all around the world who have different programs, but it's not in this model.
Okay. Second question. I have. I work in a school, a girls' school, a secondary school in Maryland. Still in this. How do you maintain? How do you give them a rich enough learning atmosphere for those who can learn and want to go on and do things and whatever, while you're still, like you said, every school does, tries to say midos are more important. Right. Every school does have a concert or some other outlet and some fun thing, and maybe a gym program, right, and maybe even an art program. Okay, but the bottom line is academics. That's true. That's what school is, isn't it?
Right.
I mean, you encourage parents. That's a good question. Especially for a student, builds up her self-esteem by giving her sewing, giving her swimming, giving her this, giving her that, whatever. Telling her what a great babysitter she is, having her help you cook and things like that. But how do you make school?
I beg to differ. School is not a place of academics.
What? It's not a place
for
academics.
A school is a place to give you life skills for life.
So, for
it's not true. A school, what's academics? It's in our society. This is important to hear. We have placed the value in our society is that you have Bachram going off and down, kids going off down, because we have told them either in words or in action, your barometer of a yid is how many blood you know. That's not true. Torah is encompassed our lives, but Limud HaTorah is one aspect, but there's a whole gamut. You can't be an Erlich Yid without Limud HaTorah. But children walk out thinking, if I know how to learn, then Hashem loves me. If I don't, what's it worth?
So in a limited period of time, I'm going back to a girls' school, okay? In a limited, which is, I guess it's not...
But that's the answer. It's not academic school. Okay. So skills for
how do you give them adequate academics?
Listen, there's a bottom line. You have to be able to get a diploma, at least in America.
You have to be able to achieve a diploma. Of course.
Let's go back to Peduel. In Peduel, I went back and I said, so where's the Masechtas at the finishing?
Right.
And he didn't have an answer for me.
Right.
It was just Matzmiach. There wasn't Boyer. You have to have both.
Yeah.
So if it's just
wild,
you need both. You need to incorporate both. But there's plenty of time in the day to incorporate both. And you know what? If I dare say...
You have boys till all night. Okay?
Okay.
So you have girls from my school, 9 to 4.
Yeah.
4.5 days.
Yeah. So I'm saying...
Okay? How do we give them any kind of education?
Okay.
I'm going to speak to you afterwards privately,
but I'm just going to address that if you have a yeshiva like Peduel, when you have tremendous Avas Hashem, but I didn't see the Baina, the bottom, being able to build on that, so all of a sudden, you're sort of disfigured. You're limping. You have to be balanced. Yeshivas are to create a human being, to give him skills for life in everything. If you just focus on one thing, then you're doing a disservice to the child. If we're just peace and love yeshiva, the child needs to move on to yeshiva gedola and be able to get into the chashev of yeshiva gedola, Ponovich, or the girls get into the chashev seminaries. You have to both. But what I found in Shai Razim is many of our bachurim came to yeshiva and they weren't the mitzvah. And I tell people, other yeshivas, you take aleph, we make aleph. Bachurim yeshiva don't want mitzvah. But because we gave an atmosphere of matzmiach, they became real Tamei Chachamim, moving on to Chosh Yeshivas. And I believe Yeshivas would incorporate more Matzmiach, girls and boys schools. It's natural growth. You'll shy yourself. Don't shut it down. Of course you have to have general curriculum, right, but you have to add that Matzmiach, and you should understand the uniqueness of each of the Talmidim. It'll happen itself. Children, isolate this. When you go to a kindergarten class, try this at home. Go to class with 20 kindergarten kids and ask them, how many of you are smart? Every hand goes up. First grade, how many are smart? One hand goes down. Third grade, how many are smart? 10 hands go down. Fourth grade, how many are smart? 2 hands up. By sixth grade, how many smart? 1 hand is up. What happened? Am I looking dumb? No, because you have all the multiple intelligence, all the 7 different intelligence in kindergarten. There's drawing, there's singing, there's this, there's that, there's this, and that's what determines smart. If you're only dealing with 2 languages called linguistic and mathematical logical, so everyone's dumb. Albert Einstein was notorious for losing his way anywhere. He had no spatial intelligence. He lost his way from the laboratory to his office. He'd get lost. In the Philippine Islands, 100 years ago, the way that the Gadol Hador of the Philippine Islands, the king, was chosen, was the one who could navigate the ships between hundreds of islands. All the commerce, everything was done by navigating ships. The one who could navigate a ship in the dark. Now, if there was no star, with star in the storm, that was the Gadol Hador. What would Albert Einstein be in the Philippine Islands? Mentally retarded. Because there's no value for mathematical logical in the Philippine Islands. It's spatial intelligence. Our system has created one value to become an Oyvid Hashem, and that's lomdus. It's not true. It's not true. It's not true. Of course, I mean, he has to learn Torah. I mean, the way we teach Torah, you can learn Torah through 7 intelligences. But it's not true. A yeshiva is a place to create Oyvid Hashem. Nothing but academics. Yeah, part of the ways. Any other questions on this side?
From your discussions with before you spoke to Rabbi Tzav Solomon, is that everybody needs the extracurricular course?
Love Dafke and Yeshiva.
So I wanted to ask, if he had it his way, etc., would he introduce this into, let's say, the more Spitz your discussion?
So the answer to the question is what he told me with my own children. He said everyone has to have a healthy outlet, must have a healthy outlet to be a healthy human being. In yeshiva systems, it's not necessarily going to. I'll tell you the story. There was once, I still live in the 5 towns, and I was friendly with one of the VSRs, a school there, VSR, the S, scholar. Mrs. Stoller, we're very friendly with him in the neighborhood. Oh, Robert Frank, I love your yeshiva. It's so great. No, Sean, we have yeshiva. That's more centrist yeshiva. Oh, such a great yeshiva. I want you to call my manal, Rabbi Kamenetsky, and I want to tell him to do desk building in our yeshiva. I said, Mrs. Stoller, this is not an arts and crafts project. It's a philosophy. You can't just take one without the other. Putting in guitar into Long Beach, this is a philosophy. You're not asking for the outlet. A good buffer, a healthy buffer, should have a healthy outlet in Long Beach and Philly also. To put it into the curriculum, there's a different atmosphere that's growing there. Remember, I was not saying that every yeshiva should have Sharazim's atmosphere. He was talking about specifically the outlet that Bacham has. He didn't necessarily say that this whole atmosphere is going to, there are concepts that have to be brought into every yeshiva according to what they need. The Lakewood Sharazim style yeshiva is much different than the Muncie one, because Lakewood has a different need.
But fundamentally, how would a parent, let's say in Beit Shemesh, whatever the design that would come here, how would they decide to send their child to any place but the Shari Razin? What would make that decision? Say, how would they go about that?
I don't know the answer to the question, because I don't know what this Arzeh Levon and Yeshiva is going to look like. And you as parents are going to be doing much more research than I am into what the Yeshiva looks like. The understanding of the philosophy is going to help you better. But at the end of the day, if you have a child that has a specific need, he needs whatever it is, and the yeshiva, for good or for bad, your child's too low, and the yeshiva can't help you, or your child is too advanced, like in my case of my son, she can help you, then you're not going to send your son there. you're going to see what the curriculum is, what are they finishing, what yeshiva are they going to be able to get into. These questions, how important is it that your child should be a successful husband or father? I mean, I don't mean to be facetious, but I made some phone calls when I was around, and I heard a lot of it about the Jewish community before I came. And it's a rough town. I mean, you know better than me. There's a lot of, it's not easy, it's not Muncie, right? It's not even Lakewood. You know, Lakewood's a rough town, but and Muncie is like, you know, peace and love. Like, who runs Muncie? Muncie is a different community. I did some phone calls to some of the council here who are dealing with some of the issues here. You know, it's scary, the numbers. You know, again, and if you want to be more or less, you know, where those numbers are, or how many, it's something that a parent has to know what's best for their child. And I think the more accurate a parent knows his child and knows what his child needs and finds what's best for him versus popular culture, I think that's your best bet. So I can't answer your question. I don't know what everyone's going to be and what level they're going to be at. Someone's child here may be too low, and they won't accept it because they can't help. Their child has a principles, and they're not equipped for that. Some child may be a genius and belongs in Bristol tomorrow. I can't answer that question. You'll have to do your due diligence to make sure that there's the appropriate level for your son's learning and appropriate needs. There's no perfect yeshiva. It's not just saying, every yeshiva is good for every type of bar. You have to have Phillies in the world, you have Long Beaches in the world, you have to have Charizards in the world, you have to have all types of yeshivas in the world, and if it fits your son's need, then it's a shidduch. If not, but it's all about being accurate with what your son needs, and that's to be brutally honest, is the key. Because you don't want to set yourself up for failure by sending to a place that is not what's in for his needs. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you very much. Are there any additional specific questions about the new yeshiva of Eitz Hashem on December 21st, which is Saturday night? We're going to be having an open house. We're going to ask all the specific questions about Ramat Beit Shemesh and the curriculum and the yeshiva. If there's any general questions or chinuch questions for Freilich now for a little while, and Freilich will be in Ramat Beit Shemesh tomorrow morning for a couple of hours. So you could be Martin with us. Thank you very much.